All right, this is Stuart Smith with SmallCapVoice.com, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the second quarter 2015 earnings release conference call and Q&A session with TerraTech Corp. We're going to be joined by the chairman of the board and the chief executive officer of the company, Derek Peterson, as well as the chief financial officer of the company, Mike James. Now, within this statements and in the Q&A section, there may be statements that are deemed forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Words such as anticipate, believe, estimate, expect, intend, and similar expressions as they relate to the company or its management identify forward-looking statements. For a full definition of what a forward-looking statement is, you can read any of the press releases and find that at the bottom of them. So let me first introduce Chairman of the Board and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Derek Peterson. Derek, welcome. Mike, do we have you there?
I am here.
Okay. Let's go back down to Derek. Let me look at the queue here. I do not have him unmuted. That is my fault, Derek. Sorry, you are unmuted now. How are you doing, Derek?
I'm good, Stuart. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear. I may even ask you to turn your phone down just a touch, but I can also bring...
Impossible, but I'll try.
All right, very well. Well, anyways, Derek, sorry about muting you there. Let's go ahead and open it up to you first with your statements. Go ahead.
Thanks, Stuart. Thanks, everybody. Welcome to our second quarter 2015 earnings call. Couple housekeeping issues first. Let me pre-apologize. I'm losing my voice, so I'm going to struggle through this a little bit. So sorry for the extra noise on my end. Secondarily, we're going to start doing these conference calls on a quarterly basis, and that's part of our commitment to the shareholders to start becoming more transparent and start becoming more available as time goes on. So we've made a commitment, at least on the very least, to start doing these on a quarterly basis, and we're also going to be announcing some shareholder meetings, hopefully at our new facility in Las Vegas towards the latter part of the year, and then another one back at our farm early spring next year as well. With that being said, why don't we jump in? I thought I would just run through each business segment just briefly, and then I'll turn the call over to Mike James to talk about our operating results for the second quarter 2015. So let's start with Edible Garden. During the quarter, I'm going to talk a little bit about what happened in the quarter. I'm also going to discuss a little bit about some of the things that are going on right now as well as through the remainder of the year. Edible Garden in the second quarter, we were fortunate enough to have some Walmart expansion, which was really helpful to us. They expanded us to 5 distribution centers. We launched a couple new products into our existing supply chain. That was one of the things that was the easiest path of least resistance for us, was not always getting into new retailers, but taking the existing retailers and adding different product lines that we can sell into that same infrastructure. So not only basil, tarragon, oregano, the normal herbs, as well as the lettuce, we're now experimenting with things like a one single potted herb or potted plant that has multiple types of lettuce, so a salad mix and a pot, a living salad mix. So we've been getting good feedback from the stores of those. As acceptance comes in, we'll end up broadening the product lineup for us as well. We've also started doing things like testing our products for nutrient densities. We're trying to find ways to differentiate ourselves and segregate ourselves from the other products that are on the shelves. We had spoken a long time ago about the Eggland's Best model, which is something that we've looked to for Edible Garden. Was a brilliant idea to take a commodity item like an egg and turn it into a specialty item by making some adjustments to how the chickens are treated and what they're fed, and ultimately putting in a good product into the supermarkets and charging a premium for it. We want to be able to segregate ourselves on the Edible Garden line using some of those differentiating factors as well. We've expanded our Kroger footprint in the Midwest to 85 stores, which was a win for us, and we're going to continue to expand the brand through the remainder of the year. I don't think there's a quarter that's gone by that we haven't seen sequential growth in that area, as well as sequential store count growth. So that's something that's very pleasing to us. And we also announced, to jump over to the cannabis side, that we've retained a firm in New Jersey. We'll do some further updates about this going forward, but we're going to be putting our hat in the ring to try to get a medical cannabis cultivation permit in New Jersey, as well as a dispensary permit in New Jersey, using the existing infrastructure we have at Edible Garden. That was always one of our synergistic aspects of making that capital investment back in New Jersey, was the ability to use that for multi-purposes, not only the production of Edible Garden, but potentially the production down the line for cannabis, and we will keep shareholders apprised of the developments as time goes on. Ibex in the lab, so I always speak about those two things collectively because they're essentially one arm in and of themselves. So We've over the second quarter, we've developed a pretty extensive marketing team. We've developed some new products, so we're not just doing waxes and shatters and oils. We're doing things like, you know, some of the names are silly and some people may find them funny, but, you know, things like cake batters and those types of things. The market's changing. The consumer sentiment's changing. They're experimenting with a lot of different products out there, and we're trying to bring some new and exciting things to the table to make sure we're differentiating ourselves from everybody else that's producing concentrates in the California marketplace. We've done so with the packaging, and again, we want to do so with the product itself. We're also focusing on the California marketplace, which has some legislation coming up in the 2016 timeframe that may change the not-for-profit status to for-profit. So we are lobbying. We're also working with legislative bodies. We're trying to put our efforts behind making sure that California lands for a for-profit status, which is a pretty big paradigm shift for our ability to operate there. And our Q3 run rate, which is we've seen a lot of store expansions that we've announced over the last couple few weeks into Q3. We've actually seen the run rate close to 300% of what we've seen the run rate or the produce rate in Q2 2015 as well. So we're seeing nice growth quarter over quarter there as well. So we're excited about that. Again, I'm going to run really quick through what's going on in Nevada and bring some people up to date there, but I am committed to putting out a broader, more detailed overview of what's going on with each one of our permit applications, permit processes in the Nevada marketplace. So I'll be pretty broad here, and I will, like I said, commit to getting something out that's a lot more detailed in the not-too-distant future. Our Las Vegas dispensary, we've completed design, we've completed the demo and the abatement there, and we're currently working with the architectural company and the general contractor to finalize our construction documents to put out to the city to get approval to start the actual fabrication inside. But it's a blank shell right now, which we're excited about. And the construction part, we should be able to breeze through pretty quickly. I'm not going to adjust any of the timelines there because we seem to be on target. We expect to begin operation there again in Q4, pending final approval from the state and their final audits and those types of things. Clark County Dispensaries is an interesting change happening there. MediPharm has resubmitted their land use and business applications for both the proposed additional locations. We're awaiting the September 2nd Clark County Commissioners meeting for final approval. So we've got a second shot, which, again, we've been working pretty diligently on, was to get a second shot in opening up those other two dispensaries where we were approved by the state but not by the local county division. So we've got a second shot at that, and we'll keep investors and shareholders apprised of that as that comes to fruition as well. Our Reno dispensary, we submitted our business license application to the city of Reno. We're currently finalizing everything through our architectural company and general contractors, doing the final designs and layouts and submitting those. We expect, again, to begin construction there in Q4 2015. We expect to begin operations probably in Q1 2016, pending, again, the final approval from the state and local jurisdictions as well. Clark County Cultivation and Production, we're currently working, again, with the architectural and the contractors there to finalize our designs. One thing that we've been doing, I think I hinted to on a prior call, was we've been testing some different technologies out. And we just finished our second test there in terms of utilizing some LED technologies. And we ended up with better yields and better THC and other cannabinoid concentrates out of the product, which actually surprised all of us. That being said, there's a huge economic savings for us, both from an initial investment standpoint and an ongoing investment standpoint in terms of paying for the energy costs. LEDs significantly reduce the cost of energy in these types of facilities. In a perfect world, we would love to go there. We were always concerned about how it would affect the quality of the medicine, and what we found so far is we've actually been ending up with a better product working with this company, which we hope to be able to announce something in the not-too-distant future. So that being said, that's the only thing that's holding up the finalization of the construction there, because if this does work like we think it's going to work, instead of having a broad, flat layout in this facility, we can actually go vertical. We can stack the trays very close to one another. We can use every cubic foot rather than just the square foot in the facility, and the production levels and the productivity levels we'll get out of that square footage will be far exceeded what we were modeling out when we entered the process in the first place. So we're on the tail end of that, and we should have that finalized shortly. The Washoe County Cultivation and Production, we submitted our business license application there. And again, we're currently analyzing what the market dynamics are going to be for size and scope, so we'll keep people apprised of our development up there as well. And again, the technology developments that we're investigating for the Clark County Cultivation Facility, if we decide to go this route, will be the same things we implement up in the north area when we decide to start construction there. Some some other key developments in the quarter. Again, we talked about adding some new dispensaries in California. During the second quarter, we added 6 new retail dispensaries. We applied for a $300,000 clean energy grant, and we put out a press release regarding that. We were subsequently awarded that in Q3 2015, and we have other portions of those payments that will be coming in over the remainder of the year, which we're pretty excited about. We expanded our line of living herbs to 5 Walmart distribution centers, again, broadened out our product lineup there, and then we also began construction on our Western Ave dispensary location. So, like I said, pretty broad overview. I wanted to really stick this call and cover the quarter as it is, but give you a little bit of idea of where we are at in terms of developing some of the other business segments. But I will, again, be committed to putting out a more detailed overview of some of these over the next couple weeks or so. With that being said, I'd love to turn the call over right now to Mike James, our CFO, to discuss the financial results for Q2 2015.
Thank you, Derek. For the 6 months ended June 30th, 2015, total revenue was $5,788,000. Edible Gardens generated $5,235,000. Equipment sales were $120,000. The cannabis division generated $432,000 of revenue for the first 6 months. Revenue for the same period in 2014 was comprised of sales of $4,272,000. Edible Garden generated $4,153,000. And equipment sales were $119,000. The cannabis division did not generate any revenue in 2014. Year-over-year, total revenue increased $1,516,000, or 35%. Gross margin for the 6 months ended June 30th, 2015, was $491,000, or 8.5%, versus the prior 6 months ended June 30th, 2014, a negative $98,000, or negative 2.3%. Management continues to focus on the gross margin expansion. Selling, general, and administrative expenses for the 6 months ended June 30th, 2015 were $5,693,000 compared to $6,096,000 for the 6 months ended June 30th, 2014, a decrease of $423,000. The decrease was primarily due to a $117,000 increase in depreciation for additional farm equipment used by Edible Garden, a $216,000 increase in advertising for the promotion of the Ivex brand, a $111,000 increase in the allowance for doubtful accounts, a $34,000 expense for directors and officers' liability insurance, a $1,074,000 increase in compensation due to an increase in the number of employees, a $174,000 increase in consulting fees related to the cannabis business, a $47,000 increase in filing fees related to the proposed construction of MediFarm facilities, a $145,000 increase in rent for the additional properties leased in connection with MediFarm's proposed cannabis business in Nevada. These increases were offset by a $260,000 decrease in director's fees, a $54,000 decrease in travel cost, mostly due to the Nevada permit in the prior year. Additionally, there was a $201,000 decrease in legal and accounting expenses primarily related to the preparation and filing of the registration statements and reviewing of the contracts performed in the prior year. Warrant expense decreased over the prior year by $1,832,000, primarily due to less warrants issued in the current period. The net loss attributable to stockholders for the 6 months ended June 30, 2015 was $4.8 million or 2 cents per share compared to a loss of $9.5 million or 6 cents per share for 2014. Cash on hand at June 30, 2015 was $2,130,000 compared to $847,000 at the end of December 31, 2014. At June 30, 2015, net accounts receivable totaled $501,000. That compared to $417,000 at the end of the fiscal year ended December 31, 2014. The company had $556,000 of net inventory on hand at June 30, 2015. The inventory was broken down between raw materials of $346,000 and $210,000 work in progress. Our negative working capital was $2 million as of June 30, 2015, an improvement of $2.4 million for December 31, 2014, which had negative working capital of $4.4 million. At June 30, 2015, the company had outstanding warrants exercisable for about 30.1 million shares of common stock with an exercise price ranging from 6 cents to 85 cents per share with an average of 19 cents. If exercised, these warrants would bring in about $6.2 million in cash over the next 4 years, assuming full exercise. At the end of the 6 months ended June 30, 2015, the company had 233 million common shares outstanding. During the third quarter of 2015, debt and accrued interest in the amount of $648,000 was converted into 8.6 million shares of our common stock. During the third quarter of 2015, we issued 9.5 million shares of our common stock with a value of $805,000 to certain directors, officers, consultants, and counsel for services rendered. We had accrued $590,000 for the first 6 months of 2015, with a balance of $215,000 being recorded in the third quarter of 2015. During the third quarter of 2015, we also issued 800,000 shares of our Series D preferred stock with a value of $366,000 to an officer for services rendered. We had accrued $291,000 for the first 6 months of 2015, with the balance of $75,000 being recorded in the third quarter of 2015. In the third quarter of 2015, pursuant to an effective registration statement, S-1, the company sold 1.5 million common shares for a net amount of $220,000. During the third quarter of 2015, the company acquired 2 acres of land in Spanish Springs, Nevada, for a total consideration of $344,000. The company intends to build a cannabis growth facility on the land that will support a future laboratory and dispensary. Additional details can be seen in our Form 10-K, as well as other subsequent filings filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. I will now turn over the call back to Derek.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the update. One of the things I said we committed to doing these conference calls on a go-forward basis, and every conference call we're going to allow an opportunity for questions and answers. So I'd like to wrap up this portion of the call and begin the Q&A section, because I always feel like that's the best way to kind of hear what's going on from the shareholders and investors and be able to address those questions directly. So on the behalf of the management, on behalf of the board of directors and all of the employees here at TerraTech, thank you for every caller that dialed in and took the time to listen to us today. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Stuart. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Derek. I do have the questions that we've compiled, and I do want to say again thank you to everybody that took the time to write them, especially some of the shareholders who went ahead and gathered questions on behalf of other shareholders as well. So I did get as many of those in as I could, so that way we don't have any redundant questions. Let's get right into it. What are we doing to get funding so that we can become profitable? Current laws and hurdles are in the way. True, as in New Jersey, Florida, New York, but there must be something more we can do.
Thanks for that, Stuart. And Mike, you can comment if I leave anything out. I feel pretty comfortable where we sit today in terms of funding. We never took the additional convertible notes from Dominion because we were able to get effective on our equity line. Again, for those who haven't heard my discussion about the equity enhancement program we did with Magna, the one reason I like that kind of equity facility is it's on our control. We can raise money and sell those securities when we want to, when we feel the price is fair and adequate, when we feel the liquidity is there. We can determine how many shares that we want to sell at any given time. So that's completely under our control, which is one of the reasons, we went through that process of filing an S-1 to get that approved. So we've got our 57 million shares effective right now. So at at 10 or 15 cents a share, depending on where we are any given day, that's $6 to $9 million of financing plus. In addition to that, if you refer back to one of our prior filings, we raised a little over $2 million in straight equity with a bit of warrant coverage associated with it. At Mike, I believe it was 13.75% or something right around there.
Percent.
And Yeah, and that was a great piece for us, and that was one of the reasons we were able to defer taking additional convertible notes. So the remainder of the convertible notes that are on the books, they're being converted out at a pace where the market seems to be able to absorb. Dominion's always been a good seller, and they've been a good financing partner with us, which is why we've stuck with them since day one. So again, I feel pretty comfortable where we sit from a financing standpoint right now. And I think we're going to be able to reduce a lot of the costs, expected costs associated with Nevada when we start to dip in some of these other technologies. And we're able to schedule and space out the development of the second cultivation facility up in Washoe a little bit, because if we get the level of productivity out of the first cultivation facility, we don't need the other one online at the same time. So the beauty of that is we might be able to build the remainder of them out with some of our cash flow that we're generating from the other facilities. So all those things combined, I feel pretty comfortable where we sit from a financing standpoint at this point in the game. I mean, we would all love the same financing that's available for a NYSE company or a NASDAQ company. The reality is we don't live in that world. But I feel like as the world that we do live in, the over-the-counter world, the microcap world, I feel like we're getting the best of breed financing at this point that's available to us.
Okay, let's jump into another one about that part of the country. I see that moves are being made on TRTC's part, New Jersey media campaign for a license. But how are we dampening down on expenses or getting funding to keep us afloat that won't drown us again like Magna? So kind of flipping the script on that last question, may not see it that way. And I know you touched on a lot of that right there about Magna, but let's talk a little bit about the dampening down on expenses part.
Yeah, we don't have any convertible notes with Magna. Magna is the equity enhancement again, which is in our the puts on that are in our control. So again, dampening down on expenses, I think, you know, as Mike stated, that's one of our largest focuses. But one of the difficult sides of operating on the cannabis division is, you know, in a normal world, if we made widgets, you know, we would look around the country and say, okay, this is where we want our factory. We're going to build our factory out. What are the tax incentives? You know, what's the hiring pool look like? What's the cost of living look like? And then we would distribute those widgets across state lines to all areas of the country and try to get them as many retailers as possible. And in the cannabis world, we don't have that luxury. And we don't have that luxury because every state's laws are different. We still have federal illegality. And then actually within the states themselves, a lot of county jurisdictions have different rules and regulations. And California is a great example of that. What that means to us from an expense standpoint is when we hire things like lobbyists or consultants or attorneys or CPAs or whatever it happens to be that specializes in this industry to help navigate us through, permitting process or operational concerns or those types of things. You know, in a perfect world, we would hire a team of people that would represent us from a national standpoint. But, you know, even within California, we may have to hire somebody that focuses on, you know, Oakland. We may have to hire somebody that focuses on Los Angeles. We may have to hire somebody that focuses on Clark County and Washoe County. And those types of activities layer on expenses more so than traditional businesses have to deal with. The headwinds that we deal with in this industry it far exceeds any other headwinds I've ever experienced in any other industry. We have all the same headwinds and risks like every other operator has. We've got economic risks, financing risks, execution risks, employee risks, those types of things. But layer on that, we've got political risks and all those other things that I talked about as well. And those are the things that become, you know, I don't want to say prohibitively expensive, but significantly expensive. So, you know, while we have an eye on expenses and while you've seen in our financial results is we're making significant attempts to reduce those on a quarter-by-quarter basis, we also have an eye towards growth, and growth means we have to hire lobbyists and attorneys, et cetera, and so forth. I mean, we could stop the growth of the company at this point. We could streamline everything. We could cut all the extracurricular expenses out, focus on profitability. But then, you know, we'd be a company that's doing X amount of $1 million per year, maybe get the thing profitable, but, you know, we would sacrifice growth. So there's always that delicate balance and delicate dance of moving upstream, and that's where we're at right now. We're not happy. We're certainly thrilled with the progress of the quarter, but we are nowhere satisfied with where we're at right now, and there's a lot of expansion opportunities. We're going to have to spend money to do that. But we've gotten a lot smarter about it, and we've gotten a lot more frugal about it, and we've been harder negotiators about it, because as the business, as the industry goes to this progression point or this maturation process, there's more potential CPAs out there. There's more potential consultants out there. There's more potential attorneys out there. So it's not just one guy that we have to negotiate with. So now we have the negotiating power to get lesser fees and those types of things as we enter into these different marketplaces. And New Jersey, you know, is probably a relatively low cost of capital for us because we've got a pretty significant footprint. We've got good political connections there. We've contributed back to the community significantly and those types of things. And the infrastructure is relatively already built, minus some changes we would have to make to go into business. So New Jersey is low-hanging fruit for us, and we want to make sure we get exposure there as soon as possible, and you know, we're going to put the money forth to be able to do so. Sorry for the long-winded answer, but I just wanted to kind of give a broader thought process and understanding to shareholders of what the landscape looks like when you're operating in the cannabis community.
Understandable, and that'll help with some of the upcoming questions. What is the current status of the investigation and or litigation of Anson Funds and Norman Gates for alleged manipulation in the Clark County voting process and share price? Go ahead, Derek.
Okay. Thanks, Stuart. What we're doing now is the lawsuit's completely written and drafted. We've finalized jurisdiction being New Jersey, and we're narrowing down two corporate counsels there again. Going back to the last question of, you know, negotiating fees and those types of things, we've narrowed it down to two different law firms to step up and carry the case for us in New Jersey, and we should have resolution there, I would imagine, in the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or so.
Are there any upcoming acquisitions shareholders should expect to see?
Well, I can't comment on that, but I can say, you know, we're always looking for accretive transactions, and I think I've said before, we're always trying to balance our short game with our long game, and our short game is investing in things like Nevada and building the brand out, and a lot of those things come with, you know, significant upfront expenses for payout down the line, and we're trying to balance that by finding short-term accretive activities and short-term accretive investments and acquisitions that can, you know, provide an immediate cash flow, immediate revenue, and immediate profitability. And then, again, the nice thing about the industry going through this maturation process is, back up 2 or 3 years ago, there just wasn't a lot of potential businesses to acquire, and now they were all pre-revenue, there were startups, you know, they were hindered with their own expenses and overhang and those types of things. So where we're at today is there's actually companies out there that are revenue producing. There's some that have great cash flow associated with it, specifically those that touch the plant, and we've made that decision, as everybody knows, to cross the green line, which really opened up the potential M&A market for us. So it's something that we're in discussions, as we always are, with companies that exist out there, but we can't talk about that and go into anything until, you know, we've actually decided and signed off on something material. But, you know, shareholders will know through a filing, and we will make sure to communicate that out. But we are very focused on the short game, and that short game is finding accretive acquisitions and mergers.
Very good. How do the shareholders benefit from IVEX, and how will the brand be able to cross state lines in the future to become more profitable?
Great. I'll take the second part of the question first. You know, the brand can always cross state lines. The product can't cross state lines. So when we open up our production facilities and we're producing extracts in Nevada, we'll be doing so under the IVEX brand as well. So we can't ship product as the current law allows for right now, but we may be in a position in the future to be able to do that, and that would be great. But as it sits right now, the brand can certainly cross state lines, and we'll build the brand out in all the markets that we're fortunate enough to win permits at. And I talked a little bit about the not-for-profit versus the for-profit legislation that's in place right now. And so everybody understands, California is not a non-profit state. It's a not-for-profit. So you don't have to operate as a 501c3 or anything like that under those same parameters or rigid oversight. What it essentially means in the spirit of law is you can't operate in that industry for the pure motive of making a profit. What you can do is build the business out, you know, you distribute the product out to patients. The cash flow that comes in, you can certainly use that cash flow to continue to build the brand out. And it's a new brand, so we had no expectations of you know, significant profitability out of that brand in the short run anyways, because we're continuing to reinvest in the brand's expansion throughout California, which is a gigantic market. It's the largest medical cannabis market, the largest cannabis market in the country. So, you know, even if we were able to operate for profit, we would continue to be pushing money into this particular brand for expansion in the California marketplace regardless. So while we're doing that, while we're expanding our brand footprint, our retail footprint, we're also working from a legislative standpoint to do our best to make certain that this state ends up to be a for-profit state, because it just makes more sense, and it's a better economic piece of legislation, and free markets are what this country are built on, and I don't think we're getting much pushback from those in California that are the stakeholders in watching this legislative piece go through. I think that's probably a likely scenario that we end up with here in California. So as we operate right now, the cash flow that we generate, you know, we can all reinvest back into the company. We can use it to, you know, build out other facilities. We can use it for brand expansion. We can use it for marketing and those types of things. And all that means at the end of the day is less capital that we have to raise. We don't have to sell securities to raise capital to do those activities. We can take the cash flow from those activities and reinvest them to do more of those activities. And that's what our focus is on right now for the next 24 months, is to build and expand that brand as many markets as we can throughout California through both the grassroots efforts, social media. We're looking at television commercials and things like that. We're really in product placement. We're really looking at things that segregate us from every other player out in the marketplace right now. And again, we've done that with our packaging. in I think the quality of our product, but we want to do so more with other activities in the California marketplace, and then obviously in the Nevada marketplace when we come live there as well.
What's the latest update and timeline on dispensaries, growing facilities, and production facilities for operations in Nevada? I know you covered this fairly extensively early on, but anything else you want to touch on there?
Yeah, nothing's changed at this point from the public filings that we've put out and the statements we've made publicly prior. The only thing that we don't have control over is after that we're done is coordinating the audits and the final permitting from the localities as well as the state. So that's the only variance we have no control over once we're done in terms of getting from point A to point B. Other than that, like I said, I've made a commitment over the next couple few weeks to get out a more detailed report of what's going on at each location in Nevada, and I'll make sure that I do that so that investors can have a good understanding of what's going on where and some of the timelines and those types of things. So I'll get that out, and shareholders can have a better, more broader understanding of what's taking place there.
Okay, have CO2 extractors been sourced for Southern California and Nevada operations in production of IVX cannabis extract?
In Nevada, yes. The short answer is yes for Nevada. The technology in this industry changes all the time. So while we've sourced these types of things, until we actually need them to build out the facility, we're certainly not putting deposits down because we may wake up one morning and there may be a new machine that's half the cost with twice the output. So while we constantly look at some of the technological advances that take place, like the lighting in the cultivation facilities, until we have to spend the dollar, we're not spending the dollar. Until we have to put the deposit down, we're not putting the deposit down. So we've certainly sourced the equipment and we're testing a lot of different stuff. We work with different providers to test before we actually implement, and we're fortunate enough to have existing operations where we can do that rather than just rely on what we're being told from vendors. So yes, we've certainly sourced, but again, we could wake up one morning and have a different level of technology and a different level of pricing that exists, and we don't want to lock ourselves into that until we're at a point where we actually need the product to produce.
All right, very good. When will the updated TerraTechCorp.com website be launched?
I think I get more emails on that than any other thing in the company. So, with all transparency, we actually had a firm develop a new website for us. We weren't happy with the finished product, and we decided not to launch because, you know, we just that's how we do things. We don't do things partially. We do things to a level that we're comfortable with before we put them out. So we're engaging a new firm to take what was done and take it to the next level. And we want it to be an interactive, informative experience when people log onto our website. So, you know, our hope is to have something over the next 60 days. I'll have a better idea of that when we get the final schedule back from the new web designers. But again, you know, we had made that commitment to get that out. We've worked on it. We weren't happy with the finished product, and we didn't want to put it out there.
Very good. Now, what is the average quarterly revenue from one dispensary so we can gauge future growth?
That's such a hard question to answer. I mean, and it varies, you know, in the California market. You may have a dispensary that's doing, you know, 20 or 25 million, and, you know, 5 miles down the road, you may have a dispensary that's doing, you know, 1.5 million. A lot of it just comes down to the types of products that are available, the service, and those types of things. So it's just that's a very, very difficult question to answer just because there are so many variables and you know, brand recognition and patient loyalty and those types of things. For Nevada, it's going to be even more challenging to kind of forecast because, you know, we don't know what that marketplace is going to look like. We don't know where the prices for the product are going to settle from a retail or a wholesale standpoint. So a lot of that's going to be, you know, something that we have to wait and see what it looks like. And again, that's one of the other things that we're working on from a transparency standpoint is putting out some forecasts that take into consideration what we think Nevada is going to look like. And also remember, too, Nevada has recreational that looks like it's going to make it onto the ballot, and that changes the dynamic pretty significantly, being the tourist destination that it is. And that's one of the reasons we're pretty excited about having all the locations around the strip that we have. If that takes place, we're in pretty good position to be able to, especially with the additional locations, to monetize that.
Very good. Now, what type of ongoing financing is currently in place, and when will the pipe financiers be out of the picture?
That can be a kind of answered that. You know, we haven't done any convertibles, you know, since the early part of the year. We're going to be relying on the equity enhancement program and, you know, the, you know, any other private capital that we can bring in, straight equity that we can bring in. You know, we're fortunate enough to get a few hundred thousand dollars from the grant. We've got another payment coming in on that, I think, in the next, you know, 30, 45 days or so. So, again, we've been pretty fortunate with financing and quality financing over the last couple quarters with the world that we live in. So I don't see any changes to that going forward. And, again, you know, as time goes on, our financing gets healthier. And, you know, we negotiate harder for, you know, as we perform on our side, we negotiate harder with those that finance us. So those transactions become less dilutive.
This might need a crystal ball to answer, but it's back to the for-profit section as well. When will TerraTech sell its first for-profit cannabis?
Well, Nevada will be, you know, the first for-profit cannabis, and we should have that dispensary opened well into Q4. We've been working, even though our own cultivation facility won't be set up and our own production facility won't be set up, we have met with and we are working with several other facilities that are going to be open ahead of us, and we our intent is to have shelves that are stocked, and Nevada will be our first for-profit, and then ultimately in California, if the legislation lands where we hope and think it's going to land, we'll be in a great situation here with broad product expansion, broad brand recognition, and a for-profit environment.
Derek, when can we expect to see an independent board of directors specifically overseeing the yearly bonuses?
Okay. We are one of the commitments I made to shareholders for this year was to change a lot of these things and to kind of position the company for a future uplisting and make sure that we have the internal dynamics that we need to get from A to B. You know, those are things like adopting a code of ethics. Those are things like putting together a compensation committee and an audit committee. Those are, and compensation committee would tie into that, not so much an independent board of directors as much as would it be a compensation committee that that goes over that. So we will make the commitment to have those three things, the code of ethics, the audit committee, and the compensation committee done prior to year end. And as far as a completely independent board, that's, you know, something that we're working towards, and we've got a short list of people, and we're trying to add more potential suitors to that, and that's, you know, something that you know, we can't talk about on a go forward basis until we, you know, it comes actually to fruition and we file it. But, you know, we are certainly always talking to potential directors that can actually bring something to the table from a synergistic standpoint, as well as not just bringing independence, but bringing some sort of operational synergy or functionality synergy to the company as well. So it's something we're focused on, but we are committed to getting those other three things done between now and the end of the year.
Very good. That concludes our questions portion. Derek, any closing thoughts or comments for the listeners right now and your shareholders, investors?
That's it. I wanted to thank everybody for their time to listen in, and we are committed to doing this on a go-forward basis. I will put together some shareholder meetings in both Las Vegas as well as back at our farm in New Jersey. We've had a lot of technological advances over there over the last year, and I think for those that have been there before, it'll be an entirely different view of what we've done there from a functionality standpoint now, so we want to make sure we do one of those come next spring. And give people a chance to come out and talk to management, meet us, you know, see the facilities and both the cannabis as well as the produce side. Other than that, again, I just want to thank everybody on behalf of the board of directors, on behalf of the executive team, as well as all of our employees for becoming a shareholder, but taking the time to listen today. So thank you very much.
All right, everyone, that concludes our call for today. I do want to thank everybody for calling in. We had over 150 phone callers in here today. We also received quite a few questions, and I think we got a very good cross-section of those questions in here today. Want to thank Derek Peterson, once again, Chairman of the Board and Chief Executive Officer, as well as Mike James, the Chief Financial Officer. Again, this is Stuart Smith of SmallCapVoice.com saying thanks so much for listening.